Welcome to The Mildly Interesting with Oliver Wilson, the official bedtime podcast of former insomniacs. Tomorrow is Saturday, November 27th, Pins and Needles Day. Pins and Needles Day started in 1937 to commemorate the opening of the play of the same name on Broadway. The play was produced by the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union. The original production cast was made up of sewing machine workers, cutters, and basters who wanted to do something a little creative in their free time. The play would end up being so successful that the cast members, who were only able to rehearse at weekends until then, were able to do so. Pins and Needles Day doesn't have to do with pins and needles as you think, but have you ever wondered about the history of the safety pin? Well, I have. And I think you might just find it mildly interesting. Subscribe to The Mildly Interesting on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are available. We'll be right back. The safety pin is a variation of the regular pin, which includes a simple spring mechanism and a clasp. The clasp serves two purposes: to form a closed loop, properly fastening the pin to whatever it is applied to, and to cover the end of the pin to protect the user from the sharp point. Safety pins are commonly used to fasten pieces of fabric or clothing together. Safety pins, or more usually a particular version with an extra safe cover, called a nappy pin or loincloth pin, are widely used to fasten cloth diapers, nappies, or modern loincloths, as the safety clasp, while remaining ingestion hazard, prevents the baby from being jabbed or pricked. Similarly, they can be used to patch torn or damaged clothing. Safety pins can also be an accessory in jewelry, like earrings, chains, and wristbands. Sometimes they are used to attach an embroidered patch. Size 3 is often used in quilting and may be labeled for purchase as a quilting pin. Size 4 and larger may be called blanket pins and deemed acceptable as kilt pins for informal dress, depending upon design and appearance. The fibula, a form of brooch, was invented by the Mycenaeans on the Greek Peloponnesus between the 14th and 13th century BC and is considered an early precursor to a safety pin since they were used similarly. Fibulae were used by Greek women and men to help secure tunics. American mechanic Walter Hunt is regarded as the inventor of the safety pin that resembles those used today. The safety pin included a clasp that covered the point and kept it from opening and a circular twist at the bend to act as a spring and hold it in place. Charles Rowley, Birmingham, England, independently patented a similar safety pin in October 1849, although the company no longer makes these. Hunt made the invention to pay off a $15 debt to a friend. He used a piece of brass wire about 8 inches, 200 millimeters, long and made a coil in the center of the wire so it would open up when released. The clasp at one end was devised to shield the sharp edge from the user. After being issued U.S. Patent No. 6281 on April 10, 1849, Hunt sold the patent to W.R. Grace & Company for $400, roughly $12,000 in 2020 dollars. Using that money, Hunt then paid the $15 owed to a friend and kept $385 for himself. In the years to follow, W.R. Grace & Company would make millions of dollars in profits from his invention. The sharpened pin attached to a coiled wire is connected with a cap hooked at the end of the wire. Pushing the pin into the opening of the cap secures the safety of the pin, and the clasp is closed. The laryngologist, Dr. Chevalier Jackson, devised special instruments for removing swallowed safety pins. Because small children often swallowed them and open pins could be lodged dangerously in their throats, Jackson called them danger pins and sometimes displayed arrangements of those he had extracted. Safety pin ingestion is still a common problem in some countries today. During the emergence of punk rock in the late 1970s, safety pins became associated with the genre, its followers, and fashion. Some claim the look was taken initially from Richard Hell, whom the British punks saw in pictures, and whose style they adopted. This is disputed by several artists from the first wave of British punks, most notably Johnny Rotten, who insists that safety pins were initially incorporated for more practical reasons, for example, to remedy the arse of your pants falling out. After seeing the clothing worn by such punk forerunners, British punk fans then incorporated safety pins into their own wardrobe as clothing decoration or as piercings, shifting the purpose of the pins from practicality to fashion. Subsequently, the safety pin has become an image of punk rock by media and popular culture outlets. Safety pins worn visibly on clothing became a symbol of solidarity with victims of racist and xenophobic speech and violence after the Brexit referendum in the United Kingdom in 2016. Later that year, the symbol spread to the United States after Donald Trump's election to the presidency. Some commentators and activists derided the wearing of safety pins as slacktivism, while others argued it was helpful when connected with other, more concrete political actions. Safety pins hold value in certain cultures and traditions. In India, pins are kept over generations and passed down to daughters. Ukrainians use pins as a way to ward off evil spirits when attached to children's clothing. In other countries, a safety pin is a form of good luck. Quilting is the term given to the process of joining a minimum of three layers of fabric together either through stitching manually by hand using a needle and thread or mechanically with a sewing machine or specialized long-arm quilting system. An array of stitches is passed through all layers of the fabric to create a three-dimensional padded surface. The three layers are typically the top fabric or quilt top, batting or insulating material, and the backing. Quilting varies from a purely functional fabric joinery technique to highly elaborate, decorative three-dimensional surface treatments. Many textile products are traditionally associated with quilting, including bed coverings, soft home furnishings, garments and costumes, wall hangings, artistic objects, and cultural artifacts. A wide range of effects can be employed by the quilter that contributes to the quilted material's final surface quality and utility. The quilter controls these effects by manipulating material type and thickness, stitch length and style, pattern design, piecing, and cutting. Two-dimensional effects such as optical illusions can be achieved through aesthetic choices regarding color, texture, and print. Three-dimensional and sculptural components of quilted material can be manipulated and enhanced with further embellishment, including applique, embroidery techniques such as shisha mirror work, and the inclusion of other objects or elements as pearls, beads, buttons, sequins. Some quilters dye or create their own fabrics. In contemporary artistic quilting, new and experimental materials such as plastics, paper, naturally occurring fibers, and plants, amongst various other materials, have been used. Quilting can be considered one of the first examples of upcycling, as it has historically made extensive use of remnants and offcuts to create new products. The origin of the term quilt is linked to the Latin word culsiter, meaning a bolster or cushion. Usage of the term seems to have first been used in England in the 13th century. However, the sewing techniques of piecing, appliqué, and quilting have been used for clothing and furnishings in diverse parts of the world for several millennia, and a wide range of quilting styles and techniques have uniquely evolved around the globe. The earliest known quilted garment is depicted on the carved ivory figure of a pharaoh dating from the ancient Egyptian First Dynasty, 3400 BC. In 1924, archaeologists discovered a quilted floor covering in Mongolia, estimated between 100 BC and 200 AD. In Europe, quilting has been part of the needlework tradition from about the 5th century, with early objects containing Egyptian cotton, indicating that the Egyptian and Mediterranean trade provided a conduit for the technique. However, quilted objects were relatively rare in Europe until approximately the 12th century, when quilted bedding and other items appeared after the return of the Crusaders from the Middle East. The medieval quilted gambesine, acaton, and arming doublet were worn under or instead more of mail or plate armor. These developed into the later quilted doublet worn as fashionable European male clothing from the 14th to the 17th century. The earliest known surviving European bed quilt is from late 14th century Sicily, the Tristan quilt made of linen and padded with wool. The blocks across the center are scenes from the Legend of Tristan. The quilt is 320 x 287 cm, 126 x 113 in, and is in London's Victoria and Albert Museum. The word quilt comes from the Latin culsiter, meaning a stuffed sack, but it came into the English language from the French word quilt. In American colonial times, quilts were predominantly whole cloth quilts, a single piece of fabric layered with batting and backing held together with fine needlework quilting. Broidery purse quilts were famous during this time, and the majority of pierced or appliqué quilts made during the 1170 to 1800 period were medallion-style quilts, quilts with a central ornamental panel, and one or more borders. Patchwork quilting in America dates to the 1770s, the decade the United States gained its independence from England. These late 18th and 19th century patchwork quilts often mixed wool, silk, linen, and cotton in the same piece and mixed large scale, often chintz, and small scale, often calico, patterns. Some antique quilts made in North America have worn out blankets or older quilts as the internal batting layer, quilted between new layers of fabric, and thereby extending the usefulness of old material. During American pioneer days, foundation piecing became popular. Paper was cut into shapes and used as a pattern. Each piece of cut fabric was basted around the paper pattern. Paper was a scarce commodity in the early American West, so women would save letters from home, postcards, newspaper clippings, and catalogs to use as patterns. The paper not only served as a pattern but as an insulator. The paper found between the old quilts has become a primary source of information about pioneer life. Quilts made without any insulation or batting were referred to as summer quilts. They were not made for warmth, only to keep the chill off during cooler summer evenings. There is a long tradition of African-American quilting, beginning with quilts made by slaves, both for themselves and the people who enslaved them. The style of these quilts was mainly determined by period and region rather than race, and the documented slave-made quilts generally resemble those made by white women in their region. After 1865 and the end of slavery in the United States, African Americans began to develop their own distinctive quilting style. Harriet Powers, an African American woman born into slavery, made two famous story quilts and was one of the many African American quilters who contributed to the development of quilting in the United States. The first nationwide recognition of African American quilt making came when the G's Bend quilting community was celebrated in an exhibition in 2002 and traveled to many museums, including the Smithsonian. G's Bend is a small, isolated community of African Americans in southern Alabama with a quilt-making tradition that goes back several generations and is characterized by pattern improvisation, multiple patterning, bright and contrasting colors, visual motion, and a lack of rules. The contributions made by Harriet Powers and other quilters of G's Bend, Alabama, have been recognized by the U.S. Postal Service with a series of stamps. The communal nature of the quilting process, and how it can bring together women of varied races and backgrounds, was honored in the series of stamps. Beginning with the children's story Sweet Clara and the Freedom Quilt, 1989, a legend has developed that enslaved people used quilts as a means to share and transmit secret messages to escape slavery and travel the Underground Railroad. The consensus among historians is that there is no sound basis for this belief and no documented mention among the thousands of slave narratives or other contemporary records. Another American group to develop a distinct style of quilting was the Amish. Typically, these quilts use only solid fabrics, are pieced from geometric shapes, do not contain appliqué, and construction is simple. Corners are butted, rather than mitered, for instance, and done entirely by hand. Amish quilters also tend to use simple patterns. Lancaster County Amish are known for their diamond in a square and bars patterns, while other communities use patterns such as brick, streak of lightning, Chinese coins, and log, cabins, and Midwestern communities are known for their repeating block patterns. Borders and color choices also vary by community. For example, Lancaster quilts feature wide borders with lavish quilting, while Midwestern quilts feature narrower borders to balance the fancier piecing. Some Native Americans are thought to have learned quilting through observation of white settlers, others learned it from missionaries who taught quilting to Native American women, and other homemaking skills. Native American women quickly developed their own unique style, the Lone Star design, also called the Star of Bethlehem, a variation on Morning Star designs featured on Native American clothing and other items for centuries. These quilts often featured floral appliqué framing the star design. Star quilts have become an essential part of many Plains Indian ceremonies, replacing buffalo robes traditionally given away at births, marriages, tribal elections, and other ceremonies. Pictorial quilts, created with appliqué, were also standard. Another distinctive style of Native American quilting is Seminole piecing, created by Seminoles living in the Florida Everglades. The style evolved out of a need for cloth. The closest town was often a week's journey away. Women would make strips of sewing the remnants of fabric rolls together, then sew these into larger pieces to make clothing. Eventually, the style began to be used not just for clothing but for quilts as well. In 1900, with the introduction of sewing machines and readily available fabric in Seminole communities, the patterns became much more elaborate, and the style continues to be in use today, both by Seminole women and by others who have copied and adapted their designs and techniques. Hawaiian quilting was well established by the beginning of the 20th century. Hawaiian women learned to quilt from the wives of missionaries from New England in the 1820s. Though they learned both pieced work and appliqué, by the 1870s they had adapted appliqué techniques to create a uniquely Hawaiian mode of expression. The classic Hawaiian quilt design is a large, bold, curvilinear appliqué pattern that covers much of the surface of the quilt, with the symmetrical design cut from only one piece of fabric. Two primary forms of quilting originate in South Asia, Nakshikantha and Rali. Nakshikantha quilts originated in India and are typically made of scraps and worn-out fabric stitched together with old sari threads using kantha embroidery stitches. The layers of cloth were spread on the ground, held in place with weights at the edges, and sewn together with rows of large basting stitches. The cloth was then folded and worked on whenever there was time. The first recorded kantha is more than 500 years old. Rali quilts are traditionally made in Pakistan, Western India, and the surrounding area. They are made by every sector of society, including Hindu and Muslim women, women of different castes, and women from different towns or villages or tribes, with the colors and designs varying among these groups. The name comes from Ralana, a word meaning to mix or connect. Quilts tops were designed and pieced by one woman using scraps of hand-dyed cotton. This cotton often comes from old dresses or shawls. Once pieced, the quilt top is placed on a reed mat with the other layers and sewn together using thick, colored thread in straight parallel lines by members of the designer's family and community. Until the 20th century, quilting in Japan generally covered local bast fibers with a more valuable cotton cloth. The rectangular nature of Japanese cloth articles encouraged rectangle-based patterns. Sashiko stitching has now also developed purely decorative forms. Quilting originated in Sweden in the 15th century with heavily stitched and appliqué quilts made for the very wealthy. These quilts, created from silk, wool, and felt, were intended to be both decorative and functional, and were found in churches and nobility homes. Imported cotton first appeared in Sweden in 1870 and appeared in Swedish quilts soon after, along with scraps of wool, silk, and linen. As the availability of cotton increased and its price went down, quilting became widespread among all classes of Swedish society. Wealthier quilters used wool batting while others used linen scraps, rags, or paper mixed with animal hair. In general, these quilts were narrow and straightforward, made by both men and women. The most significant influence on Swedish quilting in this period is thought to have come from America, as Swedish immigrants to the United States returned to their home country when conditions there improved. During the late 20th century, art quilts became famous for their aesthetic and artistic qualities rather than for functionality, as they are displayed on a wall or table rather than being used on a bed. It is believed that decorative quilting came to Europe and Asia during the Crusades, AD 1100 to 1300, a likely idea because textile arts were more developed in China and India than in the West. American artist Judy Chicago stated in a 1981 interview that if not for sexism in the visual arts, the art world, and broader society, quilting would be regarded as a form of high art. Abstract patterns by men are art, abstract patterns by women in the fabric are decorative, they're called quilts. So there are all these kinds of double standards and all these kinds of words that prevent women's experience from entering, even when they express it, from entering the mainstream of art. In the early 21st century, modern quilting became a more prominent area of quilting. Modern quilting follows a distinct aesthetic style that draws on inspiration from modern style in architecture, art, and design using traditional quilt-making techniques. Modern quilts are different from art quilts in that they are made to be used. Modern quilts are also influenced by the quilters of Gees Bend, Amish Quilts, Nancy Crow, Denise Schwitt, Gwen Marston, Yoshiko Jinzinji, Bill Kerr, and Weeks Ringel. The Modern Quilt Guild has attempted to define modern quilting. The characteristics of a modern quilt may include the use of bold colors and prints, high contrast and graphic areas of solid color, improvisational piecing, minimalism, expansive negative space, and alternate grid work. The Modern Quilt Guild, a non-profit corporation with 14,000 members in more than 200 guilds in 39 countries, fosters modern quilting via local guilds, workshops, webinars, and QuiltCon, an annual modern quilting conference and convention. The founding Modern Quilt Guild was formed in October 2009 in Los Angeles. QuiltCon features a quilt show with 400-plus quilts, quilt vendors, lectures, and quilting workshops and classes. The first QuiltCon was February the 21st to the 24th, 2013, in Austin, Texas. QuiltCon 2020 will be held in Austin, Texas, February the 20th to the 23rd, 2020, and will feature 400 juried modern quilts from quilters worldwide. Unusual quilting designs have increasingly become popular as decorative textiles. As industrial sewing technology has become more precise and flexible, quilting using exotic fabrics and embroidery appeared in home furnishings in the early 21st century. The quilt block is traditionally a subunit composed of several pieces of fabric sewn together. The quilt blocks are repeated, or sometimes alternated with plain blocks, to form the overall design. Barbara Brackman has documented over 4,000 different quilt block patterns from the early 1830s to the 1970s in the Encyclopedia of East Quilt Patterns. The simpler designs for quilt blocks include the nine patch, shoe fly, churn dash, and the prairie queen. Most geometric quilt block designs fit into a grid, which is the number of squares a pattern block is divided into. Most square patterns fall into the five categories: 4 patch, 9 patch, 5 patch, 7 patch, and 8 pointed star. For example, each block can be subdivided into multiples. A 4 patch can be constructed of 16 or 64 squares. A simple 9 patch is made by sewing 5 patterned or dark pieces, patches, to 4 light square pieces in alternating order. These 9 sewn squares make one block. The shoe fly varies from this 9 patch by dividing each of the 4 corner pieces into a light and dark triangle. Another variation develops when one square piece is divided into 2 equal rectangles in the basic 9-patch design. The churn-dash block combines the triangles and rectangle to expand the 9-patch. The prairie queen block combines 2 large-scale triangles in the corner section with the middle section using 4 squares. The centered piece is one entire size square. Each of the 9 sections does have the exact overall measurement and fits together. The number of patterns possible by subdividing 4, 5, 7, 9 patches and 8 pointed stars and using triangles instead of squares in the small subdivisions is almost endless. Many types of quilting exist today. The 2 most widely used are hand quilting and machine quilting. Hand quilting is the process of using a needle and thread to sew a running stitch by hand across the entire area to be quilted. This binds the layers together. A quilting frame or hoop is often used to hold the piece being quilted off the quilter's lap. A quilter can make one stitch at a time by first driving the needle through the fabric from the right side, then pushing it back up through the material from the wrong side to complete the stitch. This is called a stab stitch. Another option is called a rocking stitch, where the quilter has one hand, usually with a finger wearing a thimble, on top of the quilt, while the other hand is located beneath the piece to push the needle back up. A third option is called loading the needle and involves doing four or more stitches before pulling the needle through the cloth. Hand quilting is still practiced by the Amish and Mennonites within the United States and Canada, and is enjoying a resurgence worldwide. Machine quilting uses a home sewing machine or a long arm machine to sew the layers together. With the home sewing machine, the layers are tacked together before quilting. This involves laying the top, batting, and backing out on a flat surface and either pinning, using large safety pins, or tacking the layers together. Long arm quilting involves placing the layers to be quilted on a particular frame. The frame has bars on which the layers are rolled, keeping these together without the need for tacking or pinning. These frames are used with a professional sewing machine mounted on a platform. The platform rides along tracks, so that the machine can be moved across the layers on the frame. A long arm machine is moved across the fabric. In contrast, the fabric is moved through a home sewing machine. Tying is another technique of fastening the three layers together. This is done primarily on quilts that are made to be used and are needed quickly. The process of tying the quilt is done with yarns or multiple strands of thread. Square knots are used to finish the ties, so that the quilt may be washed and used without fear of the knots coming undone. This technique is commonly called tacking. In the Midwest, tacked bed covers are referred to as comforters. Quilting is now taught in some American schools. It is also taught at senior centers around the US, but quilters of all ages attend classes. These forms of workshops or classes are also available in other countries in guilds and community colleges. Contemporary quilters use various quilting designs and styles, from ancient and ethnic to postmodern futuristic patterns. There is no one single school or style that dominates the quilt-making world. Sewing machines can be used in the process of piecing together a quilt top. Some quilters also use a home sewing machine for quilting together the layers of the quilt, as well as binding the final product. While most home sewing machines can be used to quilt layers together, having a wide throat, the space to the right of the needle mechanism, is helpful in manipulating a bulky quilt through the machine when the throat is high and long. Fabric markers can be used to mark where cuts should be made in the fabric. Marks from specialist fabric markers wash out of fabrics. Quilting rulers are usually square or rectangular measuring instruments with length and degree angle markings along multiple edges. Long arm quilting machines can be used to make larger quilts. Larger machines can be leveraged so that the quilter does not have to hold the fabric. Some specialist quilt shops offer long arm services. Machine quilting needles are very sharp to readily pierce layers of the quilt and properly sew together the quilt top, batting and backing. Hand quilting needles are traditionally called betweens and are generally smaller and more robust than regular sewing needles. They have a tiny eye that prevents any extra bump at the head of the needles when you are pulling through the thread. Pins can be used in many different combinations to achieve similar results. Thimbles provide protection to fingertips. Specialist quilting threads come in many types, including different weights of thread and different materials. Cotton, polyester, and nylon threads are used in different forms of quilting. Rotary cutters revolutionized quilt making when they appeared in the late 1970s. Rotary cutters simplify the process of cutting even slices of fabric. Quilting templates patterns come in many varieties and are generally considered the basis of the structure of the quilt, like a blueprint for a house.